Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Owlpost for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week, the lovely and talented Treya Kaufman.
Hi. I just keep breaking stuff.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. I hope everyone appreciated the sideways photo of my laptop from last time.
Yeah, that was great.
I'm glad someone enjoyed it.
I mean, there's nothing better than weird technology stuff, you know? So.
Yeah.
It's not fun to go through.
It's been a week. It's been a week, all right. My 2-year-old finally discovered she's 2. So that's been fun.
Oh, that's exciting. I'll bet there's a lot of no and crying and tantrums. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Anyone who's had small children before understands exactly what I mean. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been around them, but I usually just hand them off to their parents afterwards, so.
Yeah, that's lucky.
Well, not so lucky for some of the characters we're going to talk about here in our Chapter 19 Elf Tales. But before we dig into that, you can find us, of course, wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you subscribe. That way you'll get the show as soon as it drops. And if you're over on Apple Podcasts, give us a star rating review. As we do, as you know, we read those reviews out on the show. We love those reviews because they help more people find the show, since most people still get their podcasts from some sort of Apple device or product. So that really makes a difference.
Something kind of Apple-y.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy, the numbers, but if you look at just about any podcast, the majority of their numbers are still coming from, you know, the Apple Podcasts app or something having to do with Apple. So, yeah, it makes a big difference. You can find us on Twitter, though. You can interact with us there at Join Nerd Party. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. And maybe you'd like to send Dre and I an email. We love getting emails, so you can go to thenerdparty.com. There's the contact section, and you just choose Owlpost, and then that comes to Drea and I. So, Drea, this is an interesting chapter because we do pick up pretty much immediately from where we left off, although we have moved to the infirmary where everybody Weasley-related, as well as Harry and Hermione, have all gathered as they... wait for Ron to wake up. And so it's just really interesting because not only is Ginny there, but Fred and George have come as well. And Mr. and Mrs. Weasley are there, of course, too. But at the beginning of the chapter, they're off talking to Dumbledore. And so it's kind of interesting to have this congregation of people back together, because we don't get a lot of Fred and George in this book because they're already done with school because they left and they're now running a very, very popular shop in Diagon Alley. And they mentioned that the reason that they were there because they were in Hogsmeade thinking about buying Zonkos, but they're not sure if they still want to at this point because, like, if the students are allowed to go there on weekends, like, who's going to buy their stuff?
Right. Which, I mean, who could blame them, right?
I mean, I don't know who would, but I thought it was really funny, too, that Fred, at the very beginning of the chapter, was like, so, all in all, not one of Ron's better birthdays.
Yeah, I love that. That's exactly how we start the chapter out, is him talking about how this is not a great birthday. Which tells us, though, that Ron is okay. Right? Because the last chapter we ended and he was probably okay, but we start this chapter by finding out kind of what even happened.
Yeah, I mean, Harry has explained it to everyone and, you know, they're all congratulating him on, you know, man, it's great you thought of the Beezor, and Harry's just like, man, I'm just glad there was one in the room. And I thought one of the most interesting things here is this the fact that Hermione has been there and that she's been quiet all day, it says. And she it even mentions she kind of gives this little sniff as though there's a possibility that she may have been crying. So there's real interesting kind of development between Ron and Hermione here. And even as, you know, Ron is sleeping, he kind of mumbles her name. So there's some things that are happening between these two, even though that they have been fighting for, you know, so long in this book because of, you know, his ridiculousness going on with Lavender Brown and, you know, the way that they've kind of talked to each other. I think that's really interesting to see her here and so concerned about Ron.
Yeah, and actually we get a call out from Lavender Brown kind of about that near the beginning of this chapter, because, you know, we find that she's kind of scoffs when Harry mentions that Hermione is Ron's friend. And, she, you know, she's like, friend? I don't think so, basically, essentially. But yeah, it's also really, I think the humorous area in this section, because this could get really dark. And I think that's also why we made sure the twins were there, right? Because they bring a little bit of lightheartedness and humor to the situation. I do love, though, that Madame Pomfrey spends the entire time very focused on there only being 6 visitors at any given time.
That was great. That was really great. Well, and it's interesting, too, to see the kids here with Fred and George talking about, like, who are they after? You know, are they after Harry? Are they after Slughorn? Are right. they after Dumbledore? And not really necessarily being able to figure this out. But, you know, they kind of have a good reason for everyone. But I thought it was really interesting when they were talking about Slughorn and, you know, Harry kind of divulges some information that he has, which is that Dumbledore was pretty concerned about the fact that Voldemort wanted Slughorn on his side. And I think, you know, we can see why he would want Slughorn on his side, because Slughorn is an excellent potions master. You know, if there's one thing he is good at is potions, and I'm sure Voldemort would love to have that ability on his side. So, really interesting. But then, of course, as he's saying that, he's also thinking, maybe Voldemort wants him dead so he can't share this memory with me too.
Right. They go through a whole list. It's actually one of the times I think I like to think of them wildly speculating, right? They sort of did it at the beginning of this whole series in the first book when they're speculating about what's in the forbidden wing of the castle. But I think this is a little bit of, they just don't have enough to go on. They just keep throwing, it could be anything, could be anyone at all. And I do love that when they're talking about their theories, you know, they say, well, it could be Dumbledore. And then someone retorts, well, then they don't know Slughorn very well, because, you know, the odds of him keeping a bottle of really fancy wine or fancy liquor like that are very high. So I just think it's so interesting that they speculate, but, you know, Hermione doesn't really participate. She kind of just is present. It's really Ginny and Harry and their moment together where they're sort of going yeah. through it. And then the twins kind of chip in. And then I think, go ahead.
Hagrid arrives.
I was going to say,
which is really interesting.
I don't know if it's Hagrid arrives or the parents arrive then.
Yeah. It's Hagrid arrives first.
Right.
Yeah. Which is so interesting because, he mentions that apparently Aragog is worse. His sickness is getting worse, and this is where Madame Pomfrey is really getting on to people about there only being 6 people in there, and they're like, there are only 6, and they make the narrator makes the joke about the idea of like, oh, it must have just been because Hagrid's more than one person, or at least feels like more than one person because he's so big. But he mentions, like, is somebody going on, you know, after the Gryffindor Quidditch team, because first it's been Katie Bell, now it's been Ron. And then they're like, I can't imagine anybody really doing that. And then Fred's like, and just a kind of a straight voice, and he totally believes this. He's like, I don't know, I'm pretty sure that Oliver Wood might have done that to the Slytherins if he could have gotten away with it. So, you know, it's not quite out of the realm of possibility, but it does seem like the best people on the list so far are Slughorn, Dumbledore, and Harry. But like you said, they just don't have enough information, really. And the most interesting thing about this is, too, is that if they're after the people, and Hermione mentions this, this is one of her big contributions to this, that whoever's after these people, whoever it is obviously not doing a good job, but they obviously don't care either about who gets hurt along the way. And that's what's making them so dangerous.
Yes, it's an excellent point that she makes, because it's true. And they don't really think about that or address that much, but she kind of shows that there's just a bunch of casualties along the way and nobody seems to care, because they kind of keep at what they're at. So, you know, I think it's adding an element to it that is kind of scary, right? I do find that when Mr. and Mrs. Weasley come back from Dumbledore's office and join them in the infirmary, before Hagrid and Hermione and Harry step out to allow them family time, Mrs. Weasley makes an excellent point, and it makes Harry really uncomfortable that at this point he saved more than half their family. He saved Ginny, he saved Ron, he saved, you know, Arthur Weasley, and that she's, you know, she says something to the effect of the Weasley family is so lucky that they sat in the car with Harry that first day at Hogwarts. And I feel like Harry actually feels guilty about this, and that if they hadn't, none of them would be in peril, let alone he hasn't saved them. He's put them in harm's way. So I thought that was really interesting.
Well, yeah. And I mean, it's so interesting too, because Mr. Weasley one-ups that when he's like, never a better day for a Weasley than when Ron Weasley sat in your carriage on the train to Hogwarts and became your friend. Like, they love this kid, right? And it is just so interesting the way that Harry takes it. But it's beautiful in the fact that the Weasleys don't see it that way. And I think that that's something that's really cool.
Well, I mean, especially, I think it's one of those times where we always look for someone to blame for the bad things happening, and it would be very easy for them to blame Harry for all the circumstances they found their family in, but instead they just love him as one of their own and know that there's no malintent there, and that he's genuinely trying to do the right thing, and that, you know, they have pride for being able to be a part of that and for knowing Harry and being able to love Harry. And I think that's just, it's beautiful. It's beautiful, and it's sweet, and it's tender, and it's, you know, utmost loyalty, and that's why they're Gryffindors, right? They're brave and loyal, so.
Well, and what's so interesting is the conversation kind of continuing with Hagrid and this idea of Dumbledore being worried in many ways because, you know, Hogwarts could be closed. You know, the danger that's continuing to mount here, you know, and Hogwarts, as he says, has always been kind of a risk. You know, you send a bunch of kids off to school, and this has just made things worse. And then he lets slip something really big about Snape, which he tries to backpedal, but Harry will not let him.
Well, and I think it's the thing where, you know, he even mentions, like, Harry, I know how you feel about him, so, like, don't go crazy with this theory, right? And we basically learn that Snape and Dumbledore had a little bit of a tiff that Hagrid overheard. And Snape talked about how he didn't want to do this anymore and things like that. And it just gives so much, it gives such a real side to that relationship that tells us more than just we should trust kind of unquestioningly.
Yeah, you know... So it's really interesting, too, because what we learn about Snape is that he's having an argument with Dumbledore that Hagrid accidentally overhears. And what he's telling Dumbledore is that he doesn't want to keep doing whatever it is that Dumbledore asked him to do anymore. And that Dumbledore tells him that you promised and that you're going to do it. And on top of that, there's this that, you know, he's also supposed to be investigating you know, his house as everybody is supposed to be. So just really interesting thing, like what is going on here? And of course, you know, Harry's imagination kind of runs wild at this point, but he has no idea what's going on. And Harry's continually thinking about this idea as he's going back to the common room. And unfortunately, Harry doesn't get any peace and quiet in the common room.
No. And he, you know, Hermione kind of slips away quickly to go to bed, and he runs into McLagan. And that's just not somebody he wants to see right
McLagan.
Now.
McLagan. Yeah. No. No. And of course, McLagan is there because he's heard that Ron is injured and is, you know, asking Harry, oh, does that mean that, you know, I can be keeper? And Harry, of course, agrees because he needs a keeper for the team. And fortunately, though, for Harry, he's not really all that interested in Quidditch right now. He is becoming obsessed with trying to figure out what's up with Draco Malfoy, but he's having no luck there. And unfortunately, McLagan is following him around all the time, trying to tell him what to do with the Quidditch team. And then Lavender Brown keeps trying to talk to Harry, which this may be the funniest part of the chapter, is this conversation with Lavender on why she's trying to talk to him. I was just finding hysterical.
I love that she basically wants to know how Ron's doing and then complains about no one telling her about Ron. And then she's like, I am his girlfriend after all. And I found that really funny.
Well, and apparently every time that she goes to see Ron, he's asleep, which immediately Harry's like, well, that's kind of weird in his side of his head, because every time I go to see Ron, he's wide awake.
And that's when she asks about whether Hermione is still visiting, and we kind of get her quip about friends. And, you know, it's just, it's really interesting, the whole interchange. And we basically spend a couple of pages or a small section of Harry avoiding both Lavender Brown and Cormac McLagan. And I love that he uses one against the other. He's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I have to go. I see McLagan. He must need to talk to me. And then he goes off in the complete opposite direction away from both of them.
Yeah. It's awesome. It's awesome. I love, too, that Harry is talking to Ron before the Quidditch game. And he's like, can you please just talk to Lavender? If you don't want to date her anymore, that's fine. Can you please just talk to her so I can stop having to talk to her?
And I like that he tells Ron that he's like onto him, right?
Yeah, it's awesome. And as Harry's making his way down to the Quidditch game, lo and behold, who would he run into but Malfoy with a couple of girls? And Harry, you know, questions him about where he's going, and Malfoy's like it's any of your business, which really annoys Harry because he's almost late to the Quidditch game, but he's so obsessed with finding out what Malfoy's up to that, like, Ginny's like, why are you late? And he's telling her, and she's like, who cares? He's like, well, I care. And he's like, not like I'm gonna know now what's going on. So Harry's mind is not even in this game that they're about to play. But the best part about this game is actually who's commentating on the game and their commentary on the game. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I love that they have Luna do the commentary, and I love that Miss McGonagall is right there next to her doing the commentary, like helping her so she doesn't remember someone's name. I love that she goes, something biblical, and then she goes, Codwalla!
It's awesome.
It's really funny, but she really does a good job, and I like that she even kind of calls out, like, oh, he was the one who was a little bit harsh on Gryffindor the last time. She's basically just saying exactly what she's saying, like, oh, for some reason, the keeper is taking a bludger's bat. Like, I do love it. And we come to find out later on that Ron really liked it, too, which is hilarious because he couldn't go to the match, but I guess he could hear right. It from the infirmary.
Yeah, it was really great. Well, it's just so funny because she's so much of it, she's not even commentating on the game. You know, this is an important game for Gryffindor because they're playing Hufflepuff and Zachariah Smith, who had kind of just trashed the Gryffindor team the last time they played when he was doing the commentary. And so they should really want to beat him, and so should Harry, but Harry's just having a really bad game because part of it, he's not being able to pay attention to his job as the Seeker, not just because his mind isn't in the game, but because McLagan is trying to tell everybody else how to do their job, and he keeps getting scored on because he's not doing his job, and he grabs the bat, and that's the last thing that Harry remembers is turning around to yell at him, and he wakes up in the infirmary.
Which we come to find out while he's in the infirmary. It's just, first of all, it's so infuriating. As someone who's been in Harry's shoes where you are trying to lead something and someone keeps stepping on your toes because they think they know better, it's so frustrating, right? He does his best to stay patient, but there's a few times here he kind of loses his crap at McLagan. And, you know, that instance, he just sort of is the tipping point. And when he wakes in the hospital, he finds out that they essentially lost by like a great deal. It was like 320-60 or something like that. It's a painful loss. He finds out he's got a broken skull, and she's like, "Oh, it's no big deal," which sounds awful. Mm-hmm. And she just tells him he has to stay the night there just so he doesn't, you know, overstrain himself. And he goes, "Oh, I just have to go kill someone named McLagan." And she's like, "That would fall in the overtaxing category." And it's just so frustrating. You just feel for Harriet because we've all been there where you just are so frustrated that if they just shut up and listen, you would have been fine.
Yeah, it is really funny too that as Ron is kind of filling him in with these things, he says, "You know, while you were out, Jenny came to see you." And immediately, I love the way that she describes Harry's mind, that Jenny had come in and was weeping over his lifeless form and confessed her feelings of deep attraction to him. And it was while Ron gave his blessing. It's one of the like funniest daydreams that Harry's had in the entire series.
It's pretty good.
And after that too, as they're continuing to talk, Harry's sharing about this thing that happened with Malfoy. And even Ron here is finally like, "Harry, bro, you are just way too obsessed with this Malfoy thing." And Harry just finally admits that he just wants to catch Malfoy at whatever he's doing. And it's annoying him to no end that he is disappearing off the map and he cannot figure this out. And it's just, I think it's one of those moments where Harry has blinders on and he just can't see the forest for the trees, honestly. And so and even as a reader, I'm finding myself a little bit frustrated with Harry. But in his frustration, he actually comes up with a pretty good idea of how to find out what Malfoy's up to.
Yeah, he does. I do love that he has to use a prince's charm to muffle the door again, right? He uses a couple here in this section. And basically what he does is he calls for Creature. If you can remember, that is his house elf from Sirius's house. And he decides that he's going to have the house elf basically follow Malfoy and see where he goes when he can't see him anymore. And when he shows up, it's a good thing he muffled because there's just this chaos going on. Creature shows up and is fighting with Dobby, who also shows up, and Peeves shows up, and it's just like crazy chaos all in once. I imagine what it's like having multiple young boys, like being a boy mom, them just brawling all the time. Mm-hmm. It's kind of what I'm envisioning in my parental brain right now.
Yeah, it is really funny, this whole scene. And like you said, I love that we see Harry use a couple of the different spells that he's learned from the prince's book, and Ron even calls that out. Oh, it's like, "Oh, that was a good one. Was that one of the hexes you learn from the prince? And Harry's like, yeah. And so we see that Harry's really learning a lot from this textbook, which has not been Harry's style, but he's really been paying attention to all of the things that this book has had to offer. And so what he asks Creature to do is to follow Malfoy and figure out where he's going. And then, of course, he forbids him in every way, shape, and form, whether or not he can tell Malfoy what he's doing. And Dobby decides that he will also do this because he wants to help Harry Potter. And I love, too, that he's like, and if I do it wrong, I'll throw myself off the topmost tower.
And I love that he's like, yes, that won't be necessary, Dobby.
It's so great. And so Harry tells them both, you know, I want regular reports from you guys, and make sure when you give me those reports, the only people that can be around are Hermione and Ron. Otherwise, you know, we'll do it later. And just make sure you are sticking to Malfoy like glue, basically. And so that's where we leave this chapter. But it's really, I think the thing we've seen most here in this chapter here is just that there has to be something, there has to be a give somewhere, because Harry is just, he's kind of losing it when it's coming to Malfoy. It's really beginning to bother him, and it's really beginning to impact other parts of his life, him not knowing what's going on. And if you notice too, Harry seems more worried about figuring out what's going on with Malfoy at this moment than he does about the mission that Dumbledore gave him that's really important. So there's that as well. So it's going to be really interesting to see how these next few chapters play out, to see if, one, Harry can get any information on what Malfoy's doing, and if we can have any movement in this whole, you know, we've got to get the memory from Slughorn.
Yeah, I think we've had a lot of things happen, and I think we're going to have a lot of consequences to those things coming up. Because, again, I don't think we're going to be the only ones that notice that Harry's not really staying on task, right? And he's sort of already annoyed or irritated Dumbledore for not kind of trusting him and staying focused. So I'll be curious how we kind of redirect our efforts and how we get Harry back onto the importance of the larger task he's been given and move him away from this sort of obsession, as Ron puts it, with Malfoy. And we'll also be curious to see sort of what happens with our little love triangle, right? Our Ron, Lavender, Hermione love triangle. Because I think we're also kind of out ahead with that. So the movies really combine a whole bunch of this information together and leave off a bunch of it, right? They totally leave the house elves out of it entirely, which is sad because Dobby was such a great character. So it was really refreshing to see it played out in a much different way than it did in the movie. And it made it feel really, like, really deep and real. So I'm looking forward to the next couple chapters to kind of see how this continues to play out.
Yeah. And, you know, we also have this growing attraction that Harry has for Ginny, too. So just saying, he seems to be really into that redhead.
Yeah, well, he's already saved her life once.
That's true.
I mean, we can just save the rest of the Weasleys. I think that's just what's going to happen in the rest of the books. He's going to save Molly.
I'm
just kidding. I'm not ruining it for anybody because that totally doesn't happen.
Well, before we get to our next chapter, Andrea, if anybody wants to catch up with you online, where can they find you?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And I am on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero under the name MattRushing02. Here on the network, you can find me doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we're talking about Star Wars each and every week. And you can also find me over on the Trek FM network doing two shows, one with Chris Jones as we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine and the Orb. I do our general geek show called the 602 Club. And then last but not least, talking about films through the lens of faith with my good friend Courtney over on Cinema Stories. But Thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.